The Wisconsin Department, well, that's a little Joni Mitchell, by the way, isn't it? The song Coyote, one of her songs, and gets us into our little discussion about Wisconsin coyote research. The Wisconsin DNR has undertaken one of the largest studies of coyotes ever conducted between 2016 and 2019. 68 coyotes in Iowa and Grant counties were captured and collared, and when the collars transmitted a mortality alert, the reason for the coyotes' deaths was investigated by DNR. And we're joined by Daniel Storm, who is a deer research scientist for the Wisconsin DNR. The coyote mortality study was part of the Southwest Wisconsin CWD Deer and Predator Study, and it's ongoing, as a matter of fact. And as we talk with Daniel Storm, I hope you'll join in with your questions. What do you want to know about coyotes in the state? Have you heard or seen them where you live? Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you could send an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Daniel Storm, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Well, thank you for having me, Larry. How are you doing?
Doing great. And here you are, a deer researcher. How'd you get involved with work? Why are you working with coyotes in this instance?
Yeah, great question. So as you set it up really well, the coyote work was a part of our larger project, more centering around deer chronic wasting disease. And the primary impetus of that is trying to understand ultimately what is the population impact of chronic wasting disease on deer populations. So we have an expectation of kind of where our deer herd is headed as chronic wasting disease, unfortunately, continues to spread. But we want to, you know, if you're trying to understand chronic wasting disease and how that impacts deer populations, it only does so in the context of the other things that may or may not impact deer populations. So hunting and potentially predators. And of course, when we're working on deer in Wisconsin, there's always this expectation that hey, there's predators that may or may not be involved. And there's sort of this expectation that we include that as well. But in that, it really has opened up a lot of opportunities for us to learn about coyotes and bobcats just sort of for their own sake. And coyotes are not a tightly managed species like many of our other harvested wildlife species. And they're not that well studied in Wisconsin. So it was really a nice opportunity to sort of fold coyotes into this larger project and learn a few things.
Yeah, it sounds great. Well, talk a bit more about where they were captured and collared.
Sure. So they were mostly in Iowa County and a little bit in Grant County. So if you're familiar with Dodgeville area, just west of Madison in that beautiful, beautiful driftless area, mostly north of Highway 18 between that and the river. So that really beautiful driftless country, that's where we're doing the vast majority of our collaring. Yeah. And all on private, mostly on private properties. We had just tremendous support from private landowners allowing us to do work on their property. So that's kind of the where.
And it was pretty evenly split, or almost evenly split, between males and females.
Yep, that's right. And, you know, when you're catching individuals, it's opportunistic. And so, you know, you get what you get in terms of that sex ratio. And so it was pretty fortuitous.
Yeah, it was indeed. I'm wondering about the collars themselves and what they were programmed to do. You know, I was thinking, are you doing movements of the animals or what's going on there?
Yeah, so these are GPS collars. So just imagine, you know, you have a GPS unit in your pocket right now, probably your phone, and you know people are familiar with their Garmins. It's very similar. What occurs with those collars though is that we will have a schedule programmed to get a location take in on that collar every so often. And it may be every hour, every 4 hours, twice a day or whatever. And it may vary different times of the year. And then those locations, they're stored within the collar, but they're also transmitted via satellite to us. And so then we can go log in on the collar company's website, and we can, with just a minor lag of maybe half a day, see where each individual animal has been. So yes, we get really detailed location information, and it's like locationally precise, right? It's a GPS point. So you pretty much know where those animals are, and you know when they were, because obviously every location has a timestamp. So you're able to reconstruct basically where they lived and where they moved and all that. It's really cool.
Yeah, really cool. I mean, do they pretty much stay in a particular area? Just as an aside, I'm wondering.
I mean, the thing about coyotes is they're so, in a lot of animals, I think, especially as we have GPS collars that just give us so much more information than we ever had before, we find there's just a ton of variation between individuals. And coyotes especially, I mean, some coyotes, and of course it varies seasonally, right? During the summer, they might have pups. There's a lot of food in the landscape. There's a lot of cover on the landscape. They don't have to move as much to get what they need to live, right? There's all their prey. The rabbits and the squirrels there have reproduced. So they might have a smaller home range. Now, small from a coyote, still multiple square miles. And then in the wintertime, it may blow up to tens of square miles or so. And that's, you know, some individuals are what we call transient. They don't even, for at least periods of time, don't even settle within an established home range. Some disperse. We've had coyotes walk to Illinois. So, you know, it's really quite fascinating and variable with these animals.
But, and of course, a real interest is coyotes that died. And I, was it, how many have died since the study began, and how'd they die?
Well, by the time, so, you know, at this point, the collars themselves have died if the animal, it hadn't died itself. And so we use the fate data because, and you'd mentioned this, but just real quick. So when the collar, in just a little bit more detail, but when the collar becomes motionless, that triggers something within the collar that we get an alert. So we'll get a text message and a text and an email that says, hey, collar number 8273, blah, 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 is in mortality mode. And that allows us to find the location of, you know, find that the location of that collar, which is almost, you know, in this case, going to be attached to a coyote. So that allows us to determine when. And so we know obviously when we collared them. So we're following their fates through time. So for each individual coyote, we have how long that they were alive for. You can use a bunch of statistics to calculate survival rates and what we call cause-specific mortality rate. So your probability of dying from cause X, Y, Z. So when we in wildlife, it's typical to look on an annual basis to say, okay, what percentage over a calendar year die or live? And so for our study, we had annual survival of 46%. And obviously then that means mortality of 54%. So a little bit higher than half, a little bit more than half of the coyotes would die within a year. And the vast majority of those were harvested. In fact, all but one of the coyotes that died was died from a human cause. So there was a lot of harvest. Most of that was from, say, hunting. Only there were a couple that were trapped, but most of that was from hunting. 6% was from vehicle collisions, and then about 1% was from, you know, what we call natural causes. And in this instance, it was only one animal. It appeared that this particular individual had died, succumbed from wounds from a fight with another coyote. But that happened once. And so like 47% of these animals over the course of a year were harvested.
Wow. I'm thinking about if half of them are dying, well, almost half of them are dying every year.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, you wonder how the heck are there so many coyotes out there?
Because they are remarkably adapted to dealing with that. And so it's fascinating. And so when I'm talking about this coyote stuff, I should mention that this aspect of the study has been published. So it's we have a peer-reviewed scientific journal article called Survival and Cause-Specific Mortalities of Coyotes in Wisconsin. It was published just last year in the Journal of Mammalogy. So, and as an aside, folks can go to the DNR website and by searching wildlife research, they can eventually get to the link to that study if they want to read the actual, you know, scientific text. But one of the aspects of our research was like, okay, like I just said, hey, 54% annual mortality. Well, let's put that in broader context because with the other studies. And so we went and did what is called a meta-analysis. So we went and found all the prior studies on coyote mortality in North America from Texas to Alaska. And we kind of compiled those results and looked at, well, what's the average of that and what's the range of that? So in that meta-analysis, what we found was the average survival across all those studies on an annual basis of adults, because that's what we're talking about, adults. We're not, for when we collar, we're not doing pups, mm-hmm. it's adults, mm-hmm. right? So 58% survival. So a little bit, I mean, so our survival is just a little bit below this sort of continental wide average of studies, again, going back to 60 years. So this is just, you know, a big review. And, but there's studies that showed 20 some percent survival, some that showed almost 90% survival. So huge, huge variation in adult survival. You asked, wow, that's a lot. That's a lot of mortality. How is there so many coyotes? And that's because of their remarkable ability of coyote populations to kind of compensate for that by, well, there's several things that happen when you have relatively high, in this case, harvest. One is that the other causes of mortality just occur much less frequently. And we saw that, like I said, you know, one coyote died from a fight. Well, let's just imagine these coyotes weren't harvested. Then they would have had more time to be subject to the other risks that these coyotes had. So probably more would have got hit by a car, more would have had a fight, whatever, more would have succumbed to some other cause. So you reduce harvest mortality. Well, to some extent, at least, other sources of mortality would come back in. And then what happens is when we have this sort of, so we've got this high harvest mortality, we've got lower mortality from other sources. There is also less competition among other coyotes. So you're not going to have that many. Like we had the one fighting death because there's not that, because the coyotes, there's just not going to be that much strife. There's plenty, because they've got this higher harvest rate, there's more resources for those that are left over. So they're going to die less of other causes. They're also going to reproduce at higher rates. At low densities, coyotes can have larger litters. They're going to maybe have 7 pups, where at high densities, they may have like 4 pups. Pup survival may be lower in these high density populations relative to a lower density population. So we're having this sort of scenario, I think, in Wisconsin and in a lot of these states where there's more harvest, where we've just got a higher turnover. So we're losing more to harvest, but we're adding more in each spring because the ones left over just aren't competing with food. They're just able to really crank out more and more coyotes. And that's just, coyotes are great at that. Deer do that too, not nearly to the extent, but that's just a feature of these animals like coyotes that have just thrived in the face of you know, civilization.
Daniel Storm, our guest today, a deer research scientist for the Wisconsin DNR, talking about this really interesting study done on coyotes here in Wisconsin. Questions, give a call. The number's 800-642-1234, or you could email us, to talk@WPR.org. Love to hear from you. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Talking about some Wisconsin DNR research on coyotes with Daniel Storm, a deer research scientist for the Wisconsin DNR. Really interesting study. Questions, give a call, 800-642-1234. Email to talk@WPR.org. You mentioned you mentioned rabbits as a food source, I think, early on, Daniel. But they have a little broader menu than just rabbits. Squirrels, maybe. And what do they eat?
They eat whatever they can. So that's going to include a lot of small mammals, but they are omnivores to some extent. So if there's, fruit mast, they may eat some of that. They obviously eat deer when they get a chance, whether that's predation on especially newborn deer the first couple months of life. Sometimes they will prey on adult deer, and certainly they will scavenge deer when they get a chance, roadkills, gut piles. But they are capable, and I would say rarely in southern Wisconsin do prey on adult deer as well. But they are, that's again one of their reasons that coyotes are so successful is they're so flexible in what they can, where they can live, and what they can eat.
A caller who declined to leave his name asked, why are we dealing with coyotes to begin with? Well, they are the worst and kill everything. They are not nice to have around.
I don't know. That's a research question. That's the values. And the thing about coyotes and the thing about, values differ. And there's no such thing as they're good or bad. That's just all a question of someone's values. So.
And they're eating mostly rabbits and rodents, but they also, I think they'll eat insects and plant matter and pretty much whatever they can eat.
Absolutely. Whatever they can. And, they're a member of the biotic community, right? They're an animal. They're a wild animal. They've been around from time immemorial, and they will be around for the foreseeable future.
But what would you say to hunters who believe that coyotes need to be harvested to increase the white-tailed deer population in some areas?
So that's a big question. And I think ultimately when it comes to coyote predation, I think hunters that feel that coyote harvesting is an important tool, I think they're going to kind of be disappointed in the results. One thing I just spoke about, their amazing ability to compensate. So you can they can sustain this high level of mortality. And there's been studies that have even, this is just, the hunting that we have in Wisconsin is resulting in this high harvest rate, but there's been other studies that have purposefully tried to reduce coyote populations, and they just really can't over the long term because of the coyote's ability to bounce back so fast. And the other thing is, this sort of compensating sort of mechanisms we're talking about with coyotes that applies to deer. If there's more deer, there's more competition with food, there's more starvation, stuff like that. So I can tell you, when we're thinking about our fawn survival. So as a part of the Southwest Project, we've done there's a fawn survival portion of that. In Southwest Wisconsin, the same study area, through August, we had between about 55 to 70% fawn survival. So between 40 to 30% of those fawns are dying during that early part of life, and most of that in southern Wisconsin is coyote predation. But it's really interesting to compare to other studies. So for instance, we also did fawn survival back in 2011-2014, and one of those places was in Shawnee, Wapaka, Outagamie County, so west of Green Bay. And there, the survival from the first 3 months of life of fawns was the same. It was basically the same as it is in Southwest Wisconsin. However, there was much less coyote predation. There's much less predation of any sort. What there was more of was starvation. Fawns that were starving principally because their mothers didn't have enough energy to supply enough milk. That's what happens when you have these really high density deer populations. There's no, the animals can't just keep increasing forever. There are limits. And so, for instance, we had less coyote predation, but we had the same overall survival. So the predation itself isn't necessarily driving the overall survival. And then, in fact, there was a study in, I believe it was Delaware recently, a fawn survival study, and they had zero predation. They didn't have any predators in their study at all. And you know what their fawn survival rates were? About the same as what we get, because they can't all live. They won't all live. There are limits to how many deer there can be on the landscape. There are limits to how many fawns are going to survive. That's just the reality that we're living in. So, yeah, that's my answer that disappoints so many people.
That is really interesting. I tell you, David Oshkosh has a question. Dave, hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I came in late, so I might have missed it. I'm not sure. How does this study compare, or can it compare other ag areas that maybe have more cropland versus more forest?
Compare in terms of what? In terms of like the coyote survival or what?
Right.
Survival, yeah.
You know, I think it's really, that's a good question, and I don't know specifically. Like I said, we kind of compiled these studies across the continent. And I can tell you this, there wasn't really much of a regional difference. So like the Midwest versus the Southwest or whatever, there weren't big regional differences. That isn't to say that there wouldn't be landscape differences. And I don't really know. I think it really all just depends on, yeah, I guess I can't really say for sure. I'd hate to venture to ask. So I apologize for that.
Gene and Merrill, we'll go to you. Hi, Gene.
Hi, Larry. Thanks. Yeah, I'm wondering if coyotes pose any threat to horses, because mostly those animals are enclosed and have limited running area if they do.
Yeah, good question. And I'll say, I just have to couch this by saying that's kind of out of my expertise. I am not aware of coyotes causing problems with horses, but don't take that any farther than that I'm not aware of it. So I apologize, but you know, we've got wildlife. This Wisconsin DNR has a wildlife damage program. We've got, you know, you can always contact your local wildlife biologist as well. And so there's plenty of folks in the DNR that can help with those sorts of questions. Unfortunately, I'm not really one of them.
And I think Sean, who came in late, wonders where can the coyote study be found and is it accessible to the public? And it is indeed accessible.
Yeah. I mean, I would just go on the Wisconsin DNR website and there's a search bar and you can type in deer research or CWD research or Southwest CWD deer. There's a few things you can just search, and it's really easy to find. And we've got a newsletter, a project newsletter. We've got many back issues. You can subscribe to the newsletter. It comes out several times a year with articles and descriptions of different findings. And we've got links to the actual, all the scientific publications that we produce, not just this project, but just all of our wildlife research and fisheries research as well. I'm always struck by how, you know, I feel like we do a lot of outreach, but I'm really struck by there's a lot of people that just aren't aware of just how much we've done and how much we do have available for folks to read. So I really encourage folks to take a look at that.
Yeah, and that specific coyote research and bobcat research is right on that website. And it's, by the way, I really like that website.
Oh, good. I'll pass that info on.
I think it's really useful and user-friendly kind of website. And so I really appreciate that very much. And you know what? Here we are at the end of the show, and every one of my lines are filled. I think, Daniel, we'll have to have you back.
Sure thing. I'd love to. I've I've got lots of I can ramble forever, so feel free.
It was great talking with you, and we'll get Daniel back, and we'll talk some more, because there's plenty of other questions here about deer and deer populations as well. Daniel Storm, deer research scientist for the Wisconsin DNR, our guest today. Great to have him with us. I'm sorry we didn't get to everybody, but that's the way it works sometimes. Lots of team members here that I just wanted to mention. Our producers for the show, Clara Neipert and Joel Patnott, our technical directors are Lee Rayburn and Jeff Robbins, and our executive director, of course, is Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller. Thank you so much for listening. That was a great show today, and there's lots more in store here on WPR News. Again, I'm Larry Mueller.